The world of nature can be enchanting and surprisingly dangerous. Something as innocent as a backyard garden can be fraught with peril. Amy Stewart writes about the dark side of nature in the book Wicked Plants. She says the deadly plant aconite is a doppelganger for harmless, everyday parsley.
Now, this is a garden flower, and in fact, it's a plant that I grow in my own garden. But aconite really is a pretty toxic poison, and it just happens to be one that strongly resembles parsley. I have aconite coming up in my garden right now that even I would be hard-pressed to distinguish from flatleaf Italian parsley. But it contains a poison that causes paralysis, and it'll eventually stop your heart. So it's really deadly, and the leaves and the roots, it's got this long sort of carrot-shaped root that might be mistaken for horseradish or parsley root or something like that. That's a plant that's killed people, certainly.
In fact, you tell a story of, it's a while ago, of a stew in Scotland that killed a couple of people.
You know, one of the best experiences working on this book was going through 200-year-old newspaper archives and finding these creepy tales of plant poisonings. So, yes, one of them is a dinner party that took place in Scotland in 1856 in which the roots of monkshood had been mistaken for horseradish. So the cook put them in the roast, and two of the guests at the dinner party died, and everyone else was made very sick.
You talk again and again about how you should not pick berries and consume them unless you know absolutely what those berries are. What was the one? Deadly nightshade? Wasn't that one of them? I guess if you knew the name, you'd know not to eat it.
True. Yeah, the name does give it away. That's true. But yeah, and this was one that I found by searching through medical case studies, which was something else I spent quite a lot of time doing. But deadly nightshade produces these little purple berries, and I can see why someone would just walk past them and want to try them out. But in fact, so I ran across a case study of an elderly woman who was showing up every fall with the same puzzling symptoms in the hospital. And it took years to really figure out what was going on. She was sort of dizzy. She wasn't making a lot of sense. And they finally figured out that she was walking by and snacking on these leaves every year when they came into season. They were just growing in her neighborhood. And that's what it was.
Wow. You know, if she had known deadly nightshade, she might have been more aware. But even knowing sometimes isn't right. I was fascinated in your discussion of things like poison ivy and poison sumac. And those things are not actually poisonous. They just make you miserable.
That's right. Yeah, that's a great thing about poison ivy. It is not poison, and it's also not ivy. So a misleading but nonetheless helpful name. I mean, the thing is that all of those plants, poison ivy, poison oak, poison sumac, contain a compound that we humans are allergic to. And it's quite interesting that it's only humans that are really affected. But that rash you get, that's an allergic reaction.
And it's not all humans either. I was fascinated by that. It's what, 25% of us don't have any reaction at all to poison ivy?
Yeah, just like other allergies, there's a real spectrum. Some people are what they call exquisitely sensitive and hardly have to brush against it before they just get a really debilitating rash. And other people have never been affected with it in their lives. I've never been affected by it, but I'm not going to go seeking out a poison ivy plant to experiment. I kind of don't want to find out.
There are others that you may not have any reaction to the first time, but it gets worse as you go along. Well, in fact, poison ivy is like that, isn't it?
Poison ivy is like that, and it's why if you've had several reactions, your immune system is just mounting a stronger and stronger response, and so that means basically that that reaction gets worse and worse every time. But the other interesting thing that can happen is that because the mango tree is related to all those plants, after a while, even eating a mango can give you a rash around your mouth because it's that same compound in much lower form.
Also, it's interesting that when you go, as this poor old woman did who was consuming deadly nightshade, to the medical authorities, if you can't tell them what you've been up against, it's going to take them a long time to figure out what's going on. There was a story you have about a young woman hiking in the desert, I think. It was they couldn't figure out why she had a handprint on her back.
Oh, yes. I mean, that was very creepy. What happened in that case is that this handprint, this red welt in the precise shape of a handprint, sort of appears on her back a few days after she'd been hiking. And I mean, what a creepy thing to have happen. You know, it sounds like something right out of a horror story. And in fact, it was her boyfriend had gotten sort of tangled up in this plant and had probably put his hand on her back at some point, and here came this rash. But, you know, no one could really figure it out. It's actually a plant called mala mujer, which grows in Mexico and means bad woman in Spanish.
There are, in fact, a lot of plants that get used in religious ceremonies, and those can be, I suppose, both good and bad. I don't know how to say it, though. There was one, I-B-O-G-A, iboga?
Iboga, it's often pronounced, yeah.
And ayahuasca, tell me about those.
Yeah, ayahuasca, also sometimes called wahasca, is similar. So let's talk about iboga first. It's a shrub that grows in Africa, and it contains a substance that brings on a lot of hallucinations and kind of a dangerous and crazy experience. I mean, wild hallucinations, vomiting. It's this sort of ritual, and people will actually go to Africa and seek out this experience, but it can be quite painful and quite a distressing experience. There are people who believe that it will help them recover from heroin addiction, but that's very controversial and definitely something that's still being looked into.
Of course, when you read about plant after plant, you realize that the effect on an individual may be quite different from the effect on someone else. So in religious ceremonies, of course, there are the more spiritual and the less, or the more affected, the more poisoned and the less.
Yes, absolutely. And the interesting thing about the plant world is that plants can move poison around. For hemlock, as an example, a young hemlock plant will have a lot of poison in those young leaves, but by the time the plant is mature, it has transferred all that poison up into the seeds because that's the part of the plant it most needs to protect at that stage of its life. So a lot can depend on the part of the plant, the age of the plant, even the time of day. There's such huge variability there.
And these plants that change the way we think about things can have other effects that we don't think about. In the movie Black Hawk Down, you talk about the Somali soldiers who were chewing khat. What is khat?
Yeah, this is a shrub that is chewed fresh. The leaves have to be chewed fresh in order to get this effect. And it's sort of a stimulant. I mean, it's said to deliver kind of a euphoric kind of stimulation that can sort of turn into aggression and psychosis if it's overused. But people chew it in much the same way that people in Latin America might chew coca leaves. And it's called khat or quat. And it's used in Somalia. And so in Somalia, every day, these planes land full of this plant, and it has to be distributed around the city very quickly because within about 48 hours, it really loses its potency. It's not something that can be preserved. And it looks like that really played a role in what happened during Black Hawk Down, that there were these Somalian warlords sort of running around in this very jittery sort of psychotic state all night long, and it created, or at least contributed to, that pressure cooker situation that happened.
Well, there's marijuana that is illegal in the United States, and for that reason alone, I suppose people should avoid it. But there's also the fact that marijuana can do in your cats, which I found sort of surprising. I didn't realize that it had any effect on cats. And in fact, animals have very different reactions to a lot of these things.
Yeah, and I think that's something that people really, really forget is that humans are affected differently by these plants than a lot of animals are. And marijuana is one that you definitely want to keep your cats out of. It can cause seizures and it can send them into a coma, which is very dangerous. And also, people tend to lie about what might be wrong with their cat and not want to fess up to the vet, which means that they don't get the treatment they need. But even more common houseplants and, for example, lilies, lilies can cause kidney failure in cats if they chew on the flowers. Most people don't know that. And also, we don't quite know why that happens or exactly why it only happens to cats, but they're uniquely affected by that.
We always think of our pets as being smart enough not to eat things that will kill them, but they're just as dumb as we are, aren't they?
Yeah, and I think it's really important to remember that we cannot rely on animal instincts. We're talking about domesticated animals eating unfamiliar plants, really, you know, exotic tropical plants like houseplants. There's no reason why they should have an instinct to avoid those. So
you're beginning to sound as though we should not only cover all of the electrical outlets when there are small children around, but also put the plants up really, really high.
Well, you know, it is interesting that people will rush around and cover every single electrical outlet, in spite of the fact that I've never once actually heard of someone sticking a finger in an electrical outlet and being electrocuted, but we all can visualize that possibility, and we do that. But in fact, you know, there's only something like 3,900 instances of electrical injuries a year, and there's more than 68,000 instances that are reported every year of plant poisonings. So I think it's just a sensible precaution to take, especially around kids and pets.
Well, it makes sense when you start to look at the list you have of everyday garden plants that are toxic in one way or another. The hyacinth, the tulip, you wouldn't think of those as being in any way bad. I mean, they smell nice, for one thing.
That's right. And, you know, I mean, in a lot of cases, they're mildly poisonous. I mean, hydrangeas contain cyanide, but they contain a little bit of cyanide. Nonetheless, when I see a wedding cake that's been topped with a huge hydrangea blossom, I always think, why? Why choose a flower that has cyanide when you could have chosen an edible flower instead? So, you know, I think it's worth being aware of. And the fact is that a lot of common garden plants that are poisonous also taste terrible. So even a little kid who puts them in their mouth might take one bite and spit it out, fortunately, and not be harmed.
Sounds as though you really ought to never go into your garden without gloves on, and certainly not wearing shorts.
You know what? I wear gloves in the garden now more than ever, especially when I'm handling a plant like aconitum or monk's hood, which you can actually get some tingling and numbness just by handling it, just by having it on your skin. So I think that's a common sense precaution to take. I mean, I think for the most part, you know, the reason this is so interesting to me is, you know, it's not so much to scare people to death, but it's more that nature has a lot of power. And I think we know that. I think when we look at the ocean, we can see that the ocean's very powerful. I think we know that when we look at the animal kingdom. I think we just sort of forget it about the plant kingdom. I think we sort of make a mistake to assume that plants are always naturally benign and healthy and good for us. And if it comes from a plant, it must be good.
Amy Stewart tends her own poison garden in Northern California. Her latest book is called Wicked Plants.